From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FS.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you very much indeed. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show, live from a very warm and very pleasant Salford. Good to be with you as always.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, very nice to be back speaking with you live today in my absence yesterday. I will be on air tomorrow, Friday, as a result of that. As I said, it's a glorious day in Salford. I hope it's nice wherever you happen to be in the world. I've got two very interesting guests this afternoon. Spiro Skouras, no stranger to this programme, will be on in the first hour. He'll be with me in about 20 minutes' time. Activistpost.com journalist and, of course, a terrific YouTube channel as well. And later on, Ryan Christian, the founder of the American Vagabond independent news organisation, who's also got a very successful YouTube channel. He'll be on with me live from the Pacific coast of the United States of America. Yeah, so big old... Packed old show it is this afternoon, and as I said, I hope you are tip-top, really, tip-top. Quite a few things to get through before we hear from the lads, so I better get straight into it. Let's get straight into it. You heard Simon on the news there talk about the lockdown, reintroduction of lockdown in the northeast of the country. Restrictions back in play from midnight tonight, including things like pub curfews at 10 p.m. Sky's Sarah Hewson.
Hello, good afternoon. 2 million people living across the northeast are facing up to the reality of tough new coronavirus restrictions. They include a ban on households mixing indoors, as well as a 10 p.m. curfew for leisure and entertainment venues. New lockdown rules will apply to council areas in Newcastle, Northumberland, North Tyneside, South Tyneside, Gateshead, County Durham and Sunderland following a dramatic spike in infections. The measures will include a ban on socialising with people from different households, a 10 p.m. curfew for pubs and restaurants and curbs on travel during peak times. People are being advised not to socialise with other households in public or go on holiday together. And food and drinks venues will be restricted to table service only.
Table service only. Sarah Hewson there. A dramatic spike in infections means 243 out of about 2 million people. Yeah. Here's the Health Secretary, Matthew Hancock, speaking this afternoon.
I know the whole House knows that these decisions have a real impact on families, on businesses and on local communities. And I can tell everyone affected that we do not take these decisions lightly. We agree with the local councils that we must follow the data and act. And the data says that we must act now, so we can control the virus and keep people safe. And I know that the people of the North East will come together to defeat this virus, as defeat it we must.
Defeat the virus and defeat it we must. The lunacy of it. Pubs to close at 10 o'clock. Arbitrary, asinine, absurd, atrocious, anti-common sense. Really? So at 10 minutes to 10 then, this could be you in your local pub in the North East. At 10 minutes to 10, I don't do any accent, so I ain't going to attempt the Geordie accent. This is you, right? Hey, how are you, Mary? Pint of Guinness, love. Double Bacardi and Coke for me. And a baby sham for herself. Hey, how's himself? Hey, is he all right? Grand, lovely. Lovely. Ah, you can bring him over to the table. That's a 10 to 10 now. 10 minutes to 10. But then at 10 o'clock, the virus be like, yeehaw. See? You see? That's the virus. That's the virus at 10 o'clock. So it is arbitrary, asinine, absurd, atrocious, anti-common sense. Of course it is. More and more people are waking up to it, I think. Whether they will do anything about it, that's another case entirely. So it is ridiculous, arbitrary. A point made by Julia Hartley Brewer, the thinking man's crumpet, when she interviewed Health Minister Edward Agar this morning. Now, he was the guy the government threw out to do the rounds of the talk shows. Edward Agar, Health Minister, Julia Hartley Brewer pointed out that, well, it's all a little bit on the silly side.
Not an epidemiologist. I don't have any medical background, but a lot of us are a little bit confused. Maybe you as Health Minister can explain to us that I didn't realise that viruses could both tell the time and count so well. Can you explain to me why six people sitting at a table together in a pub at 9:59pm is perfectly safe? And seven people sitting in a pub at a table at 10:01pm means we're all going to die.
Good question.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily characterise it as you did there, Julia, but I take your point.
Yeah, she was a bit glib there.
Point. The issue being that what we've seen in, for example, Bolton and some other areas is that it's that nighttime economy. It's towards the end of the evening.
The nighttime economy.
When people have had a bit to drink, that sometimes...
You've had a few sherbets, your inhibitions have disappeared, and you're hugging everybody.
People aren't always as aware of the rules or forget the rules, and therefore you can see groups starting to get together, starting to break the rule of six, starting to have that close contact. And it's one of the things that appears, and I say appears, to be a factor in driving up infection rates in those areas where you see large groups of people late at night who've enjoyed themselves perfectly reasonably with a drink or two, but okay. Who then sometimes...
But
we've enjoyed ourselves perfectly reasonably with a drink or two, but... we're inclined to be a bit huggy and a bit touchy-feely. That was Eddie Agar there, one of the health ministers of the government. We're heading for a brave new world, dear listener. I'm wondering, were you listening to BBC News at 1 this afternoon? You weren't? Well, here we go. They sent a reporter called Mark Lowen to Rome. Nice gig. Where they've been trialling airport testing for a month. You arrive a little earlier to the airport, you take a swab test where they stick that thing up your nose, it's very uncomfortable, the result comes in 30 minutes, and if you pass, you get on the plane, if you fail, no flying for you. Here's Mark Lowen, BBC reporter in Rome.
Only passenger who tests negative for COVID-19...
Tickets, passport and compulsory negative test result. Welcome aboard Europe's first COVID-free flight. All these passengers from Rome to Milan have been tested either at the airport before the flight or within the previous 72 hours before being allowed to travel.
Lovely. Now, he then speaks to a few passengers who are brandishing a piece of paper with their result. They're relieved. So we'll skip that. And in the next clip, after you hear the reporter, you will hear Marco Troncone, he's the CEO of Rome Airports.
For now, two of Alitalia's seven daily Rome-Milan flights demand the negative result to board using government-run rapid testing at the airport.
These are the guinea pigs of Europe for a scheme designed not only to reassure passengers but also help air travel to recover. And if successful, this could be rolled out to other domestic and international routes.
Could this be a model to help passengers avoid quarantine rules in Britain and elsewhere?
We think this is a concept which can actually be applied throughout Europe. One of the things that didn't work out during the last few months is much lack of coordination. So it's very important to join forces and to make some step ahead, again, forming, as I said, clean, sanitized, COVID-free corridors, which do not reserve any real restriction on arrival.
Rome's airport testing unit has been running for a month already for arrivals from Croatia, Spain, Greece and Malta, and now for passengers to Milan. The result from the swab comes after a quick half-hour wait.
Yeah, quick turnaround, effectively. You get in there a bit earlier, as I said, you get your swab, and it green lights you or says you can't get on the plane. The new normal. And the woman heading up testing in the airport is Teresa Esposito. You'll hear her.
This was a political decision that Italy made to protect the health of our population as much as possible and to stop positive cases coming through the border. And until there is a vaccine available, this will probably be the future.
Yeah, coño, Teresa, coño, puta madre. This will be the future until we bring a vaccine into play. Life will just be unbearable, then you'll take the vaccine. But at that stage, the health passports will have come in and they won't dispense or they won't dispose of those. So you're going to be screwed every which way. you'll beg for the vaccine. I don't mean you, because I think you have a fair idea of what's going on. But most people will beg for it. They are begging for it. They're begging for tests. I don't know if you're paying any attention to UK mainstream media. But as I said the other morning, or the other evening, Tuesday evening, they are screaming for tests. People, screaming for tests. It isn't media propaganda to make you and me think that people want tests when in reality they don't. They do. This is work to treat this. Staggering stuff. Sky and both Sky and the BBC had live reporters. Live reporters. None of this pre-recorded. Grabbing people in Sunderland and in Newcastle. Grabbing them just at random and asking them about the new restrictions. And apart from one woman who said it's a load of crap and it's totalitarianism, one woman did, everybody else said, yeah, absolutely. Lock us down. Lock the fuck out of us. Lock us right down so we can have a good Christmas. I'd rather we were locked down now, said one woman. Lock us down now. If it means that people don't die at Christmas time. So there you are. Now, Tim Spector is a man who works at, he works in twin research. That's researching twins. As in twins, as in Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's a researcher, a professor of twin research and genetic epidemiology at King's College in London. And he's also, is this guy, very involved in mobile apps. So he's a bit of an expert. He said a couple of things on BBC Breakfast Radio this morning that they would rather he hadn't said. This is interesting. Tim Spector on BBC Radio 5 Live with the intrepid Nicky Campbell. Feast your ears.
Basically, the rates are really shooting up in most northern areas and also a few hotspots in Scotland and Northern Ireland. But
he's basically justifying the new restrictions here. He said he basically says the rates are shooting up in the north, northeast, and then he comes on to the south. Listen very carefully.
There's a clear difference because we're not seeing the same thing happening in the southeast and the southwest of the country.
Why not?
It's a good question. I don't think anyone's really adequately explained that. It's amazing we haven't had major outbreaks in London, for example. One possibility is, certainly in London, that people that might be immune.
Really?
That the people out on the street, if you like, exposing themselves, commuting, have already been exposed to the virus and therefore they have some relative protection. And the other half of the population is still hiding.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I mean, there was a figure...
Well, that's more than interesting, Nicky. It's a little bit more than interesting. If you're out and about, going about your life as normal, this thing will run in and out of your body and will leave you with an immunity to it more than likely, whatever it is. This is pretty important because this was the approach that Sweden took to the virus, at least originally.
Figure that was going around last week that perhaps as many as 17-18% of people in London have had the virus, and you think that there is some level of immunity might be one of the explanations as to why infections are not as high as they are in other parts of the country. That's fascinating.
I mean, if you go around Soho, I was there the other day, the people milling around all over the place, you'd think it would be exploding there. But I think it's, that percentage is probably higher in the people who are out on the streets. And so those figures of sort of 15 to 20% are probably underestimates of the people who are actually being exposed at the moment.
Wow. Is that one of the answers to this then?
Is that one of the answers? Here you get a real question from Nicky Campbell for the first time in months.
For ultimately, I know there was this concept of herd immunity.
There was this concept of herd immunity. Herd immunity is scientific fact, you numbnuts. That's what happens. Flu. Every other infection, that's what happens. People get it. They build up antibodies against it. And it weakens whatever it was to begin with. And society gets over it. Herd immunity is not some joke or some theory. It's pretty much what's been happening as long as man and woman have walked the earth,
Or herd mentality, as President Trump put it the other day. But is that the answer to this? Just in the long term, if we don't get a vaccine, you know, people getting it?
Getting the virus?
It's certainly a strong possibility to explain some of these differences.
Yeah, strong possibility to explain that down south, they appear to not be getting infected, meaning that they're immune, most people down south. Nikki Campbell and Tim Spector. Now, interestingly enough, they go on a little bit. They talk about the issue of testing children. Now, again, if you've been following UK media today, there's this massive outcry about testing children, the need to test children. And you have politicians on national television and radio today basically talking up the testing of children, that it's vitally important to test children as part of expanding tests in wider society. Right, okay, what am I talking about? Well, this guy has a really interesting take, this Tim Spector, on whether testing children is any use at all. Have a listen.
A lot of the anxiety is also caused by what's happening in children's schools. I just wanted to, if I had a moment, just to highlight that, the difference between COVID and a cold. Our app is showing that basically if a parent or a child has cold-like symptoms, a runny nose, congestion, sneezing, then highly unlikely to have COVID. And this is, you know, based on, you know, lots of people's data.
This is amazing now, because you have parents all over the country being phoned by head teachers to say that a child is being sent home because the child sneezed or because the child coughed. Right? This is happening. And this is the problem reaction solution thing. Head teachers are saying, you've got to go home, you've coughed or you've sneezed. There's a big problem there. And this guy is saying, if a child coughs or sneezes, very, very, very unlikely. It's extremely unlikely that the child has COVID-19. Listen on.
It doesn't cause those wet symptoms. And if you don't have really severe headache or fatigue in the first week, then you're highly unlikely to have COVID as well, because the fatigue and headache run across all the age groups. They're non-specific, but they're, you know, when you've had it, you know it. And 80% of everyone has that. So again, for parents worried about their children, you know, even if they've got some other symptoms like a cough, it's probably not related to COVID. And most of the tests being done, you know, 98% are still negative at the moment.
Wow. 98% of the tests are still negative at the moment, he said.
At the moment. So people are still over-calling COVID at home. So I think that...
People are over-calling COVID at home. Now, you might have heard Nikki Campbell furiously typing on his computer in the background there. And the BBC presenter, Campbell, and the producers are starting to get very uneasy here, because he's not supposed to be saying this. This is not the agenda. It's not part of the narrative. He shouldn't be saying this, because the BBC is pushing the testing of children. The government is pushing the testing of children. But this epidemiologist, this expert from King's College in London, is saying it's a nonsense to test children. Just let children get on with it. So the presenters are starting to get a bit antsy. And somebody in the... There isn't a gallery in radio. There's a production studio. Somebody is getting antsy, saying, you got to challenge this or just ease this guy off the air.
That would be the sensible advice, particularly until the testing system gets back on its feet again.
Tim, this is a really important point, because lots of parents are being told their children are sent home from school, they've got a bit of a cough or even a cold in some cases.
Well, sent home now, like I told you a minute ago. I've seen this in Salford. I've spoken to people in Salford whose kids have been sent home because they sneezed.
The other day, if you give your child Calpol, they could be... susceptible, or they could be harbouring the virus. And schools are telling them to go out and get tested. It's part of the reason that the whole testing system is under such strain. So can you clarify exactly when a child should be tested?
Yeah.
Well, at the moment, I don't think it's sensible to test a child unless they're severely ill.
And they don't want to hear this, the BBC. Nor does Sky News, nor does the government. This is fascinating now. Will you hear it?
Severely ill, and they have sort of all the symptoms. Because just a child having a cough is actually, that's a rare sign of COVID. It's not like adults. Adults, you know, we do know that the loss of smell and the cough and the fever are the cardinal signs. In children, having a cough, if you don't have a real severe headache and severe fatigue, really is not likely to be COVID. So anyone with, you know, cold-like symptoms, a runny nose, really doesn't matter what else they've got, highly unlikely to be COVID.
Wow. I mean, this is really exceptional stuff from this guy. And he's very hesitant in his speech pattern. I think it's because he knows that at any minute he can be interrupted and taken down. He knows he's going against the grain here. This is really good stuff.
Really is not likely to be COVID. So
wow.
Anyone with, you know, cold-like symptoms, a runny nose, really doesn't matter what else they've got, highly unlikely to be COVID. And so we have to rethink this, particularly in children. And people have got to be sensible and realise that colds are, you know, perhaps 100 times more likely to be a cold than COVID.
Brilliant. Colds are 100 times more likely to be a cold than COVID. Right, so they decide that his time is up. Now, at the very outset of this 9.5-minute interview, which is on BBC Sounds, BBC Radio 5 Live Breakfast, Nicky Campbell, Rachel Burden. If you want to hear the entire interview, go to the BBC iPlayer, BBC Sounds. At the outset of the interview, Nicky Campbell took great pleasure in introducing him as an expert, Tim Spector, Department of Twin Research and Genetic Epidemiology at King's College in London. Listen to the way he basically departs the interview.
COVID.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Tim. As Tim Spector. It's 7:15.
Tim Spector at 7:15. He's now just Tim Spector. And that's unprecedented. That's unprecedented because it's a matter of course, it's a matter of professionalism that after 9.5 minutes you say, that was Tim Spector, Department of Twin Research and Genetic Epidemiology, King's College in London. But Tim said that people are showing immunity and cases are not on the rise in the south of the country because people are probably immune. There's no need to test children whatsoever. And even if you've got a cold and a bit of a cough yourself, it's very unlikely to be COVID. So we better get Tim off the air fairly quickly and don't announce who he is as he leaves in case the listeners think, Christ, that's interesting. He's a bit of an expert, eh? A clear and present danger to the life, to the health, to the well-being of the nation. That's the UK mass media. This is The Clash. Spiros Gouras next. The Clash and Rudy Can't Fail from London Calling, or London's Calling, get it right, Baldy. 27 minutes past the hour. Yeah, you're just plain old Tim Spector. Welcome to the programme, Tim Spector, legendary professor of twin research and genetic epidemiology. Thank you. Welcome, Tim. Welcome. Then Tim says things you don't want to hear, or you don't want anybody else to hear, that people are immune to this thing, that it's not that big a deal, and stop testing children. Children are not getting COVID. So then you say, fascinating. Thanks, Tim. Tim Spector there. 7:15, move on, lively. My guest this hour, and he'll be with me till the top of the hour, all being well, is a friend of mine. He's an independent journalist with a terrific YouTube channel with a massive following, not that he cares about those things, where he interviews people and presents facts, facts that are hidden by the mainstream media, not just mainstream media in the US, but elsewhere. You can also find him on activistpost.com, and he's on Twitter at @O_Rips, R-I-P-S. He's the one and only Spiros Gouras. Welcome to the programme.
Hi, Richie. It's so great to be on. Thank you so much. You know, I want to congratulate you on 6 years. That's huge. And of course, I also want to thank your audience who supports you, who helps make this show happen. You have a fantastic audience and they are legion. So thanks. It's great to be here.
You're very welcome. Thank you. I gave you a nice introduction. If you say things that I don't like, I will leave the interview and just say that was Spiro and just play a tune. That's the way it's going to be on the mainstream media. And we're going to do it here on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's great to have you on. I heard on the news at the top of the hour a story about a heat ray weapon being used on protesters protesting Donald Trump, and then a denial by the National Guard saying they didn't have such weapons. An unusual way to start, but I'm fascinated. I know you've researched, you've looked into, and you've broadcast about sophisticated weaponry. maybe weapons that we're not aware even exist. What do you make of that heat rays being used against people who say that it felt like my skin was burning? What do you think of that?
Well, it's on record that these weapons exist. And of course, they were first deployed overseas by the U.S. military. You know, for example, LRADs, which are basically frequency type weapons that yes, can cause extremely painful noises and heat sensations. And it's amazing how you find, you know, how much information you find out afterwards. Recently, for example, the Defense Secretary Esper announced that because Russia and China has weaponized their satellites with directed energy weapons, the U.S., you know, has to respond, essentially. So, you know, these are just, I mean, we're just seeing more rollout every day of new technologies and just like everything else, once it's deployed, you know, overseas under the name, you know, of war, it always comes home to roost and is used against the people, just like the, you know, MRAPs that are used, the armored vehicles that, you know, were overseas. Now they're here on the streets in America. And so it's just astounding to see how this is being weaponized and used against the people, military grade weapons.
You've you spoke to me some time ago, a long time ago, about such weaponry. We just passed the anniversary of September the 11th, the 19th, I think, anniversary of it. And I think you said to me in the past, it was you who said, when we learn about a weapon, Richie, that sounds new and sophisticated, that means that it's been around for a long time. We get to hear about it a long, long time after it was ready and developed and used. Do you think such a weapon was used on September the 11th? We will talk about COVID and Trump and vaccines, of course, in a minute. But I ask you that because I saw a tweet you put out today, Elon Musk changing his avatar on his Twitter thing, which with an image that looks suspiciously like a directed energy weapon. Is that what you think was used to destroy the buildings after the planes hit on 9/11 or whatever happened?
Well, personally, obviously, I do not believe that the planes brought down the towers.
No.
Of course, it appears through, you know, many years of investigations through, you know, architects for 9/11 and everything like that, they believe that there were explosions, and eyewitness accounts report explosions, and some of the footage from the newscasts that were taking place at the time, you can actually hear explosions taking place. So in my mind, and based on the footage of the buildings collapsing, and you compare those, for example, to the buildings, the controlled demolitions that they used to do of the casinos in Las Vegas. In my opinion, I believe that was controlled demolition. And when you look at, you know, the official story is that two planes knocked down three buildings in New York on September 11, 2001. For amateur pilots, that's pretty darn good, Richie, wouldn't you say?
Amazing. Yeah, I was lucky enough to speak to some pilots in the late 2000s. Not just the pilots for 9/11 Truth guys, great guys, but other pilots who said they couldn't have, not only would it have been impossible for an amateur to do the towers, but the moves executed by Hani Hanjwar, who descended and allegedly descended and crashed into the Pentagon, nobody was ever able to recreate that flight path on a simulator, as you well know. So the whole story is nonsense. Yeah, I think controlled demolition, Spiro, explosives place, it makes sense to me. Spiro Skouras is our guest, activistpost.com. Please subscribe to him on his YouTube channel. He's excellent, and he's got excellent people on there all the time, asking questions, talking points that you never hear on the mainstream media. So President Trump then has been in the UK news today because he seems to be adamant that a vaccine could be ready in your country before the end of the year and could be deployed on a massive scale. What's really going on there, Spiro?
Well, unfortunately, President Trump, who does have a history, and just for the record, I am nonpartisan. I do not subscribe to either political party, to any political party. I do not endorse any candidates. I just call it as I see it. Now, President Trump has a history of being what they call, you know, anti-vax, which we know is a derogatory label meant to silence anyone who questions the safety or efficacy of vaccines.
Yeah.
He is on record speaking out against vaccines. Now he is in the position of having to run for a second term. And it appears that he is politicizing the vaccine. It appears to me that he wants a vaccine. He said that he wants a vaccine basically before the elections. And to me, that sounds like he wants that to be used as a, you know, a victory for his campaign, you know, something to campaign on. And it's interesting to see pushback from, you know, Gates and others, who, of course, are the biggest pushers of vaccines in the world. And they're, it's so funny to see, and ironic, and probably a psychological operation, but they're saying, oh, well, we can't have the vaccine that fast because we're worried about, you know, we want to make sure it's safe for everybody. Meanwhile, as you reported on your show, AstraZeneca has, you know, they had major side effects with patients that caused major spinal cord injuries and paralyzed a woman. So it's and it's very important to point out that Trump has said months ago that once the vaccine is available and ready, he's going to deploy the military to deliver the vaccine. Now, I've not yet heard any kind of other details or clarifications as far as what exactly does that mean? Does that mean they're going to be on military trucks and they're going to drop them off at these facilities that they're building right now? And that's it? Or does that mean that it's going to be a military personnel person, you know, injecting you with the vaccine? In addition to that, it's notable to point out that the Department of Defense is actually involved with the funding and the research and, you know, with DARPA, the Pentagon's Advanced Research Project Agency, in the development of these vaccines in partnership with Bill Gates and others. So it's, you know, very concerning to me to see all of this playing out, thinking that we're walking into a perfect storm here, coming with the elections, the coming flu season, the rollout of the vaccine. You know, this is a very, very critical time that we're in right now, Richie.
It is undoubtedly. And on Trump, if I can just stay with him for a minute, like yourself, I'm nonpartisan. I haven't voted in an election for nearly 20 years, it must be said. I did, for the crack, I did vote in the 2016 Brexit referendum just so I could film myself doing it for a goof, and I obviously voted Leave. So I did. So I don't have any truck with any of them. I don't believe Trump is, as we would say in Ireland, thick, stupid, but I also don't believe he's clever. I don't believe he's clever enough that pre-2016 he knew that he could mobilise a large base of people by being anti-vaccine, by talking about leaving the theatres of war in the Middle East. I'm not sure he's that sophisticated. I'm willing to accept that Trump was sincere. I mean, didn't he meet with Andy Wakefield? And one of the times Andy was on this programme, he talked about that. He didn't get into any great detail, but he said Trump was courteous to him and gave him an audience. This was just before the election. So maybe Trump, not to be glib about it, but maybe Trump somehow believed some of this stuff, and he was shown, I don't believe he was shown as a Pruder film, but maybe when it got to the point where he was going to inhabit or take over the White House, maybe somebody put him straight on how the world really runs. What do you think? Do you think he was sincere when he was anti-vaccine and talking about his family and meeting Andy Wakefield? I think he might have been.
Well, yeah, I believe that prior to entering politics, you know, like you said, he spoke out, and I've heard, I haven't looked into it really, that his son may have been injured by a vaccine, and that may have attributed to his position. But he also, in the past, if you look at, he questioned on radio shows 9/11, what took place on 9/11, you know, and now here he is supposedly in, you know, the highest position, you know, here in government in the U.S., who has access to all kinds of classified information. And we just had the anniversary of 9/11. Why is he towing the official line and everything like that? That, you know, this that false flag was used to kick off these never-ending wars and the rollout of the police state and the surveillance state. Why? I mean, he's just pushing along in many respects with the same old status quo. So this is, two sides of the same coin type of a thing. It's really concerning to see the switch, that's a great question. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in some of these closed door meetings. Like, someone must sit him down and say, hey, listen, here's your script. And he does go off script. I'll give him credit. And people like him for that and everything. And he's supposedly anti-establishment, but he continues to carry on the establishment narrative in many respects.
He does. An old friend of mine is convinced that the elite and its various clubs and associations, obviously the Bilderberg Group, and then you have Freemasonry. There's a friend of mine who's convinced that they do play a very long game, because I asked him before about Trump and 9/11. And he said, Richie, give a little bit of consideration to the possibility that Trump was chosen to be a president of the future 15, 20 years ago, and that somebody was creating a narrative for Trump that he could rely on when he was creating this character of this shoot from the hip man who was going to make America great again. And a good friend of mine, I'm not talking about David Icke now, I'm talking about an anonymous friend of mine, he said, consider that way back then they'd already thought of him as president. But to be fair to this friend who is intelligent, he also buys into the Simpsons episode as well. So as part of the Trump narrative story. But might they play a long game as far back as that, do you think?
Well, it is. I don't think he would have been on that stage in 2016 if he wasn't already in the pocket. To a large extent, and this is a very unpopular position to take, and I'm sure that many people who follow my work will not be happy to hear me say this, but it's what I believe. If you do not play ball with the system, you wouldn't be on that stage. Okay, so and plus to become that rich and prominent and powerful and everything like that, especially in New York, he's playing ball with them on some level, and I believe is controlled. I mean, look at, they're naming parts of Golan Heights after him.
Yeah.
And everything. So, this is another story for another day, but, and then you're talking about the Simpsons episode and the predictive programming, and it was also in Back to the Future. So with all of that aside, regardless, the long game is real, and it's been rolling out for generations. Incrementally, the social engineers and the technocrats have led us up to this exact point in time right now. And, they have controlled opposition, and they have their artificial intelligence algorithms to where they can not only predict our behaviors before we do them, but influence them. So I think that we're following a script right now. And I believe, honestly, that this is the eye of the storm that we're in right now as we approach the fall and winter months.
By the way, for those who don't like that, I have three words, and it's tough love, it's tough shit, Paddy. If you want to live in an echo chamber for the rest of your life, go ahead and do that. It's one of the reasons we're in the mess we're in now, because in the independent media, right across, I don't blame the content creators, I blame the consumers. I blame the consumers, because they've gotten themselves into a situation where they become almost incapable of hearing anything they don't agree with. And it's so unhealthy. It's devastating, really, in terms of what it does to any chances of advancing out of this nightmare. So if Trump's supporters love you because of the work you do and then decide to fall out with you and not listen to you anymore, well, tough shit, Paddy. That's the way it is. Spiro Skouras is our guest. I've been asked to put so many questions to you. You've heard, knowing you, you probably got the first 15 minutes of this programme. They're going to lock 2 million people down in the northeast of the country. They're not even falsifying the figures anymore. It's beyond that. But you've uncovered evidence, and I know you've been tweeting it, that as far as falsifying the numbers go, inflating COVID numbers, it's going on in your country as well, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. There were some major revelations, that have come out recently. For example, the CDC quietly admitted that only 6% of COVID-only patients have died due to COVID-19. And this is if you believe the numbers, which, yes, of course, have been inflated. It was even admitted by Dr. Deborah Birx that, you know, all deaths essentially who test positive for COVID are going to be marked down as COVID. And we know that the tests give, you know, massive false positive rates. But so put all of that aside, they admitted that only 6%, you know, would die from COVID only. So that means that 94%, which is, you know, a massive number, you know, died from something else with COVID, supposedly. That means, and you have like a 1 in 19 million chance here in this country of dying from COVID alone. And I looked it up. You have a better chance of being struck by lightning twice versus catching and dying of COVID. Mad. You don't have any under health, you know, under any other conditions. But it did come out yesterday here in Nashville, Tennessee, that some emails were revealed, and a local Fox News station reported about these emails. And these emails are between the mayor's office and local health officials. And it reveals that, you know, they locked down the bars and the restaurants, and because of the, you know, the numbers are so high, right? Well, it turns out due to the contact tracing programs that the numbers were extremely low. They had like 22 cases that were traced back to bars and restaurants out of the 20,000 cases that they said they had, yeah. You know, up to maybe 80 cases. So, these emails expose them saying, well, we're not going to tell the public this, right? It's like, no, this is not for public consumption. So not only are they lying about it, they are covering it up. I mean, this is beyond criminal. Thousands of people have been lost their jobs and are relying on government assistance, which is garbage. And, you know, who knows about how they're going to feed their family, where, if they can keep a roof over their head. I mean, this has got to stop. And the only way it's going to stop is if the people stop it. You know, we need to resist what has become COVID-1984.
You've made a good point there. You've made a very good point. It's now beyond debate that the officials pushing it, the local and national politicians and the media, they know. Listening to BBC Breakfast Radio this morning on Radio 4 and Radio 5, I know that those presenters and those producers know the truth. That you have, like you said, struck by lightning twice, you have more chance of being killed by a corpse thrown out of a plane by Nicolas Cage than getting COVID and dying. You have more chance of dying in a boxing ring killed by an epileptic pugilist than you have of being killed by COVID-19. And they know this. And the thing is to know what to do about them. And you're a journalist, and you report the truth, and you hope that people will act on it. I don't know what to say to people. Because I get people saying, well, violence, Richie. But I believe, and you touched on this earlier on, you mentioned DARPA, you mentioned heat rays. I think they'd love it, Spiro, if we decided, even if there were thousands of us, who decided we're going to take pickaxes, and you could take your semi-automatic rifle, and I could take a torch and light it on fire, and some, you know, some petrol bombs. And I will never do that because I'm a pacifist. But I believe they'd love that. And then my mates tell me, oh, you're just a coward. We'll never know till we try. But no, I don't think trying to beat them on their own patch is the right way to go about it. What do you think, honestly, about that?
Well, Richie, I do not endorse or condone violence at all whatsoever. But I tell you what, I will defend my family to my last breath, okay? And I believe that civil disobedience is much more powerful than any of us really realize. And, you know, yes, we do have the numbers, no doubt about it. You know, we could just, I think that would be a very effective approach, is if we all just stop complying with the garbage. They are trying to force us to comply through like these health passports that you've been reporting on, you know, that, hey, you won't be able to go see the football game if you don't have your health passport. Next, it's going to be, you know, you can't go grocery shopping or you can't go to your job and clock in. So the answer, ultimately, I don't believe that there is a silver bullet, like one solution answer, because there were many different scenarios and operations that have got that have led us to where we are right now.
Yeah,
you know, over generations. This is, like you said earlier, the long game. They have us right where they want us. So there isn't one silver bullet solution, unfortunately, to this. But I know for sure that if we continue to comply and if we continue to go down this road of tyranny, we will lose everything, Richie. So we have no other choice but to resist, in my view.
No, it's right. And it's why I repeated two or three times, to people who go to London in the next couple of weeks, by all means do that. By all means. There's nothing wrong with it. But you got to do something a bit. You got to do more than that when you come back. You can't come back and be satisfied that you got to meet Piers or you got to meet David or you heard a wonderful doctor speaking. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. If there was any danger that those protest meetings would be of any threat to the elite or the establishment, they would break them up. It's as simple as that. So by all means, it's very healthy, it's very good to be outdoors, to stick your fingers up at them. But non-violent civil disobedience is the only way out of it. And I showed this myself a few years ago, infamously, on this programme, when I had a big row with Manchester City Council, and they sent bailiffs around. And I showed how to deal with them. They were in the wrong. They said, oh, we underestimated a bill, they said. And you owe us some more money. And I told them to feck off, as we say in Ireland. And they sold the debt to a debt collection agency, a debt that I didn't know. I said, basically, it's like Spiro me going into your store. And you said, right, Richie, it's $2 for that sandwich. And as I'm halfway down the street, you chase me and say, oh, I should have charged you $2.50. Tough shit, Spiro. I've given you the $2. You know what I mean? But what I did was I showed how to deal. I made some phone calls. I recorded it all. I put it on the air. And I said, when you disobey tyrants, laugh in their face and turn your back on them, they usually go away because they don't know what else to do. So I totally agree with you. It's got to be civil disobedience. And I understand the gun, by the way. I joke with people about you because I know you're a gun owner and you've every right to be a gun owner and a responsible one as well. We're just so, in this part of the world, it's such an alien thing to us, a gun. But I think if I was in your position, I'd probably learn how to use a gun and I'd probably have one stored safely. Let me ask you this while we're on guns. Is it still your belief, or was it your belief, that your government, the federal government, is still planning to disarm the American population at large? Do you think so?
Well, vice presidential candidate Biden just announced, you know, that he wants more gun control just another, you know, last week, I think it was, after the two police officers were shot in the face in Compton by a criminal. So, I mean, this is always something that Americans, I think, it's on their mind, especially whenever, you know, some type of event takes place, it gets politicized. And the left, yes, always is talking about gun control and, you know, trying to keep you safe. But of course, the criminals are always going to be armed, including the government criminals, those of them that are, you know. So, I firmly believe in the Second Amendment. I've been around firearms my entire life, you know, since I was a child, you know, safely, of course, with adults and everything like that. But I mean, it's been a part of my culture, essentially. So, I am not a criminal. I have zero criminal history or record or anything like that. But regardless, the criminals are always going to have them. So I believe that, yes, it is part of the agenda. And I believe that we should resist that.
My many years ago, I can't find the clip. I don't think it exists. But when Michael Moore made the anti-gun film Bowling for Columbine, which was a very well-made film, and it made some interesting points, but it was very slanted. And Moore brought it out, and he was speaking on Irish radio to Gerry Ryan, rest in peace. And Gerry Ryan made a fantastic point to Michael Moore that he couldn't answer. Moore was basically, he was all in favour of basically taking guns away from people, reducing people's ability to get a gun. And Gerry Ryan said, if you got, you've got a place in New York, yeah, and you've got you got holiday homes, you've got a home in Los Angeles, yeah. Are they guarded, says Gerry Ryan, the Irish presenter, brilliant, one of the best radio presenters of all time. And Moore said, yeah. By men with guns, said Gerry Ryan. And Moore said, yeah, what's your point? And Ryan said, well, what do you think my point is? The people you're looking to disarm, they don't have the money to have security firms patrolling outside their properties armed to the teeth. You might be a bit of a hypocrite there. But the clip, I can't get the clip anywhere. It's a great clip, you know. Spiros Gouras is our guest this hour. It's nearly 5 minutes to the top of the hour. Don't forget The Last American Vagabond making his debut on this programme. Another hugely successful YouTube channel owner and website owner. He will join us in about 10 minutes, I think. Which will be interesting as well. You're still a bit optimistic, aren't you? You think that, whereas I'm increasingly tending towards pessimism, you believe that this has shocked so many people, this agenda, this vax agenda, this demand that people have health passports, that they've actually inadvertently woken up more people than they ever imagined. I think I'm putting words in your mouth, but I think you believe this is a great opportunity.
Well, it is, without a doubt, the most critically important time of our lives. And I believe that we have some very important decisions that are going to be very difficult decisions to make here in the very near future. Yes, I have seen people around me. I stop and talk to random people if I'm sitting next to them at a red light, or whether it's colleagues of mine, or, you know, just people at the store. I mean, I'm talking to people, I see people. And when I start to engage in conversation with them, they tell me that they think it's, for lack of a better term, bullshit. I mean, people are seeing this more and more. So yes, they are waking up. But what concerns me is that they're pushing forward with this agenda regardless. Do they think that they have it in the bag that, you know, I don't know. But all I know is that the time is now. I mean, this is incredible. If you look at, for example, in the UK, they have just published or approved last week on September 10th the right, supposedly, for the government to retain fingerprints and DNA profiles of COVID-19 infection, you know, patients or whatever. So, and then in Victoria, they're talking about passing a new bill. They're pushing a new bill to detain conspiracy theorists, anyone who speaks out of line. So, you know, if we all start to stand up and resist this, then I believe we have a chance. That's the only way. Otherwise, they're just going to pick us off one by one, Richie.
You made the point earlier, and it's a very good point. The reason maybe the confidence is sky high with whatever is behind this is because I think they're looking ahead to late 2020, early 2021. And they're already doing it here. They're trialing these passports here, you know, for sports events and concerts. And as you said yourself, this will be, it'll be pretty common. You'll need one, and it will need to show that you're healthy. You will need one for work and for everything else. They think that's their ace card, the coercion. I really do believe that. It's easy for me to say, well, I won't participate because I work from home. I'm completely independent. I am up to a point. I mean, if the internet companies or the hosts, the domain hosts, if they start turning on us, well, then we're in trouble. But generally, as far as work goes and as far as my social life goes, I can put up with it, I think. But a lot of people won't be able to. So I think, interested to get your take on this. This is the acid test now, is when they start saying, you can only come to the stadium, you can only go to church, you can only go to whatever, to the shopping mall, so long as you've got the vax and so long as you've got the passport. That will be the acid test then. I think at that stage, if people bow their heads in resignation, we're screwed. And I'm just hoping that they won't, Spiro. What do you think?
Well, you're absolutely right, Richie. That is their ace that they're planning on using. And it's extremely concerning. I, for example, have not worn a mask when I go to the grocery stores or anything like that. I refuse to. I walk into my local grocery store, and there is a giant sign that's almost as tall as I am that has a big picture of a mask on it, and it says mask required. And I just walk right past it. And occasionally you will see people in there without a mask, but the majority of the people are wearing them. They're complying. We have been conditioned and trained and indoctrinated into complying for generations. And so it is very worrisome to see, you know, I would say, look at the amount of people who are complying with the masks will probably comply with, everything else, essentially, you know, so it is very concerning. You know, when I say that, you know, I am you know, you mentioned that I'm confident. I don't know that I'm confident, but I'm very concerned, no doubt about it. And this is, like you said, I mean, if the more people that submit to this, the more in trouble we are, you know.
Good to have you on today. Always good to have you on. Say hello to Lakey for me. And folks, you can follow Spiro on Twitter. It's at O, that's O for Oscar, underscore, or R-I-P-S, Romeo Indigo Papa Sierra, at O underscore Rips. Of course, activistpost.com. And if you look for Spiro Skouras on YouTube, you'll find him. He's got an enormous following there. And the production values are brilliant. Interview style is fantastic. And he's got some really interesting guests. And they're the sorts of interviews you can take to your friends who might be compliant to this agenda and share them with your friends. And it might give them a second opinion. It might give them a moment of pause. Lovely to have you on again, mate. We'll do it again real soon, no doubt. Again, regards to Lakey. And thanks for coming on this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
Richie, it's always my pleasure. I love the show. I don't miss an episode. And I'm really looking forward to listening to The Last American Vagabond right now, Ryan Christensen, coming up here very soon. So thanks again, Richie. It's always a pleasure.
You're a gent, mate. Thanks for that. Spiro Skouras, folks, activistpost.com and Spiro Skouras on YouTube, Skouras. It's exactly 6 o'clock, about 3 minutes behind. Ryan Christian, The Last American Vagabond, will be with me in a couple of minutes' time. Let me do this and then we'll be back. Thanks for your comments, lots of comments on Twitter. Nice to know you're listening.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Now, my great friend Jean Anne has been in Dublin, in Ballyoughclea, in the capital. She says, Richie, two young waitresses in the almost entirely empty Gresham Hotel Lounge wearing masks. Two young waitresses wearing masks in an empty hotel lounge, nearly empty. Got into conversation with them, says Jean Anne. One Russian, the other Irish, both hate having to wear the masks. One of them said it makes her dizzy. Both of them think it's a con and there's something else behind it. Both of them think it's a con and that there's something else behind it. But they have to wear a mask over both nose and mouth all day long, says Jean Anne. A lot of people know that it's a load of bollocks. But are they in a position to do something about that? To take that information and do something about it? It's easy for me to do what I do and say what I say. It's not always easy for other people. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, 3 minutes past six. On Thursday, the 17th of September, time for headlines from FSN. Back in 60 seconds.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. India's posted another record surge in confirmed COVID cases with 97,874 in the last 24 hours. The UK government's denying reports. It's being advised by scientists to impose a two-week national lockdown. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the number of people allowed into Australia will increase by 2,000 a week, and over 200 prisoners have escaped from a jail in northeast Uganda.
Thanks, Ollie. Yes, I have heard this afternoon, I've heard it mooted, that there might be a two-week lockdown coming for the entire country. It's madness, this, isn't it? Eh? Curfews, pubs, 10 o'clock, the northeast of the country in lockdown from midnight tonight. All because...
Don't kill granny.
Do not kill your granny. There's no need for it whatsoever. Leave your grannies alone. And your granddad's. Ah, be Jesus. Hey, this is the BBG, not the BBC. Richie Allen, the Baldy Gammon, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. of the last American vagabond joining me live from the Pacific coast of America in about 3 minutes' time. KC and the Sunshine Band, 7 minutes past the hour, baby, give it up. Sulfur Drive Time. A lot more cars on the road, a lot more lorries on the road these days. Maybe that's a good sign, I don't know. Thanks for your tweets. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. The programme archived on Podomatic, Spotify, iTunes, the usual. Live every Monday to Thursday at 5 o'clock. I'm saying this because my guests, pretty popular guys, and some of their own listeners might be here for the first time. So this garbage that you're hearing from me, you can hear it every Monday to Thursday, 5 o'clock UK time, 11 o'clock Sunday mornings. Those are UK times. My next guest is the man behind a hugely popular news organisation. He's the founder of it, the American Vagabond. And there's a YouTube channel that accompanies it, a massively popular YouTube channel, where also, like my first guest Spiro, you will find an avalanche of very interesting interviews with men and women, activists, journalists, giving you a different perspective to that which you get on your daily news channel. Delighted to welcome him for the first time. Many of you know who he is. It's Ryan Christian, the last American vagabond. Ryan, thanks for taking the call. Welcome to the show.
My pleasure to be here. It's been something that we've been trying to set up for a while. I've had a lot of people ask me to reach out and vice versa, that they want to see us to get together. So I'm glad we can get this happening.
Very kind, Ryan, and great success with the channel and with the website. Congratulations. Now, I'll ask you the first question. Well, I didn't ask Spiro this because I've known Spiro. I know you know. I've known him a while. You've known him a long time. 6 months into this, is your head still spinning, Ryan? Did you see it coming? What's going on?
This is one of the saddest times to have ever been right about something, right? I mean, this is not even to say that I necessarily had called every single part of this correct, but people like Spiro as well, from the very, very beginning, what was the very first things you were hearing from those of us, that the solution would be worse than the problem. Yeah. Now that omits a huge part of the discussion about, you know, complicity, foreknowledge, and so on. But regardless of how it started or whether it was intentional, clearly we saw that this is exactly, or we see this exactly where we are now, that their actions are far, far worse than whatever they're told we're dealing with. And this is what we said right in the beginning. So I'm still surprised. I mean, regardless of whether or not I expected this is what would happen, I'm still just unbelievable. I'm blown away that it can happen this obviously, and that still there's so many people that refuse to recognize it. Sad.
And what about yourself personally? I mean, you obviously, as an independent content creator with the YouTube channel and with the lastvagabond.com website, you're busy anyway. At any given time of the year, you've got a lot going on. This, of course, as they say in London, you're double busy. But did it have an impact on you? I mean, an emotional one. I don't want to go down this road, but just for a second, how has it impacted on you personally?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And just to clarify, that's the last American vagabond.
Excuse me, .com, the last American vagabond.com. That's the one.
But I don't think there's a person out there who hasn't been emotionally affected by this. And I think that's a huge factor in this. And even myself, even somebody who feels like I feel like I see behind the scenes a little bit, I wake up certain days and I notice the difference. I feel, you know, just drained or depressed and I think we all have a degree of that happening right now.
Yeah, we do. For our listeners, for those of them, there will be one or two who are new to you and it's the first time they've heard you. I'm sure that it'll be the same for people who have supported you for years. How did you come to create The Last American Vagabond? Tell us about it.
It's an interesting story. For me, it essentially started where I was actually traveling the country in an RV with a friend of mine. And at that point, and this was for different reasons, we just wanted to, you know, be traveling. And I had this revelation about, as many of us have over the years, whether it was, you know, 9/11 that did it for a lot of people or, you know, different points, which that one was big for me as well. But I had this kind of revelation where I had the moment where I realized that the media is, you know, they're lying to you. I mean, the first moment we all realize that you can see the same story from two different outlets and they're both saying this is the fact. And yet they're both different. And you go, wait a minute, how is that even possible? Well, one of them's lying, right? You kind of have this epiphany where there's a lot of dishonesty going on. And I decided to start it. And that the fact that we were traveling is what kind of was the impetus for the name and the idea that, you know, your search for truth should never really come to an end, right? It's the traveling aspect of this. But for me, it really started with cannabis, actually, the cannabis law reform part of it, and which then just kind of broadened out into just all kinds of government malfeasance and manipulations of our information. I think cannabis, we all know, is a huge part of that manipulation that stems out to a lot more than just cannabis. It's, you know, civil rights, it's medicine, it's all kinds of stuff. So that's where it started. But as people can see, it broadened out into foreign policy and anything else I think you should know about.
Yeah, and it's been around a long time and incredibly popular and gaining in popularity. But you've had a, you'd laugh if it wasn't so tragic, I think. And I don't laugh at anybody else's misfortune. I certainly don't. You've had Google claiming that you're impersonating yourself and that your own YouTube channel is an impersonation of your own YouTube channel. Help me understand this. I've never seen anything like this in all my life.
Yeah, before it happened to me, I hadn't really seen it either. And but on that note, I am noticing a lot of other people recently start commenting on Twitter as well. Oh, look, I got hit for impersonation. Yeah. So I think this is a new tactic of theirs to effectively kind of lock down a channel, and then they could just later pretend like, oops, it was an algorithm error. But essentially what it boils down to is that they're accusing me or whoever they're hitting with this of impersonation. And if you look at the policy, it's very clear what that is. And there's only, it's either if you're pretending to be someone else or you're trying to model your channel after somebody else's channel, right? So neither of those things I'm doing. I've gotten hit with three different impersonation strikes over the last so many months, one of which they already removed as a mistake, yet left another one, and now have hit me with a third. And so it seems just this way that they can manipulate whether or not you're able to broadcast. And interestingly, right now, there's a huge story about this Chinese virologist and all this stuff coming out. So you just wonder if that's what it is or not. But at the end of the day, I'm clearly not impersonating myself. And the lack of accountability, the lack of any kind of mechanism to reach out other than on Twitter where they give you a boilerplate response and then never follow up, it's just mind-boggling.
For
and
those
I think that's
of you
what people start to realize about YouTube.
Absolutely, Ryan. For those of our listeners who are shaking their head with incredulity, it's happened. I've seen the screenshots, and I've been on Ryan's channel. They've accused the man of impersonating himself, and they've done it to him several times. And you would fear that ultimately that would lead to the termination of the channel, which is egregious. It's so wrong and it's so hurtful. I mean, recently it's happened to people like David Icke. It's happened to others. You know, you put a lot of effort into that. You're honest. You're sincere. You make good content. It's not, it's certainly not hateful, not that that should really matter, but it's certainly not harmful. It's good stuff. And the idea that they would just take it away like that, it's desperate. Dr. Vernon Coleman here in the UK deleting videos and all of that. And what would you do then, Ryan? You look at other video hosting platforms, I suppose. Your own website is hugely successful anyway, which gives you, I suppose, an advantage over many others. So what are you doing? Are you keeping your powder dry, just waiting to see what happens next?
Yeah, good analogy. I mean, I definitely right now just trying to just kind of be prepared for what, you know, because right now we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? Because there's two strikes. All it takes is just one more strike. And, people who've seen this happen know they're probably combing through the last thousands of videos I've done over the last 10 years. And all they need to find is one thing they can broadly say applies. And suddenly my entire channel's gone forever. And the point is, I for a long time now have tried to distance myself from relying on YouTube to get the message out. The problem is that YouTube is clearly the folk where we should be focusing if we're trying to reach the most people that are lost to the story. Right. So it's not that we still should be trying to get our content there in front of people, but we should stop letting YouTube be the conduit between everybody and our content. So I'm using, you know, DLive, Brighteon, I'm going to forget them all now, but just, you know, BitChute and, you know, new streaming platforms like Rockfin I'm using a lot. You know, the point is just to broaden out. Everybody, even the user out there, needs to start opening accounts with different kinds of platforms. So we're not just left at the mercy of these kind of obviously authoritarian type censor platforms.
Ryan Christian is our guest this hour. It's 16 minutes past six here in the northwest of the UK. And thelastamericanvagabond.com. You should be there. You should follow the YouTube channel as well. Packed with very, very good interviews and presentations about news stories with facts that are conveniently omitted from the copy of Fox and CNN and the BBC. It's good to have Ryan on the programme today. Got into it with Spiro in the first hour. Your president talking about getting a vaccine out in time for maybe before the election, maybe shortly after. Spiro thinks it might be an election tactic to beat, to use as a stick to beat Joe Biden. With how disappointing. Now, I know a little bit about you, Ryan, so I know that, like Spiro, I mean, you know who these people are. But you will have a lot of people who watch your content, and they'll be very passionately committed to Donald Trump, or at least they were. How do you think they're feeling now? And what's going on? What is he doing coming out saying we can get a vaccine produced really quickly and get it into people's arms by November? What's happening?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I definitely think right now more than ever, I've seen a lot of people begin to stand back and at least be uncertain about some things that Trump has been saying. Or, you know, for instance, I've got people in my family that were, you know, real strong Trump supporters and still are, but that they're right now openly going, I don't know about this. Why is he doing that? Which was never happening before. And so we have a lot of things like the Operation Warp Speed action where, you know, you would have argued before that that the predominant amount of his supporters were, you know, just very skeptical about the vaccine direction and would have never said that Trump would support it. But the moment that he does it, it becomes, well, it's Trump's thing, so now we can support it. And that's kind of the way they've built that narrative. And that applies on both sides of the two-party illusion. But I think what's happening with Trump is that he's revealing a lot of these actions that are showing the exact direction of what they would have argued that we don't want to be going in, things like putting Moncef Salawi as the vaccine czar, yeah, or continuing to fund in different ways things that find their way to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation or to the World Health Organization through Gavi. You know, that's both from USAID and then two different direct donations from Trump's administration. So even if you want to pretend to remove funding from the World Health Organization, you can still see that kind of circumvention. So I think that a lot of individuals, Trump supporters, are now kind of going, wait a minute. You know, that's not what I believed and that's not what I agreed with. So a lot of people are questioning it. But the sad thing is the two-party paradigm is one of the largest aspects that keeps people from breaking free of that. They still just want to believe in a person. It's the you know, messiah complex, like we always want somebody to save us, the savior complex.
It's funny, Ryan, isn't it? Because so many of them were very honest when they said, we voted for him in 2016 because Hillary is Methuselah. Hillary is the whore of Babylon. Of course she is. I mean, Hillary is about the worst human being on planet Earth. No doubt about that. But I couldn't get through to people at that time that didn't really matter, that he wasn't going to be a hell of a lot better. And maybe this time around, it might sadly be the same. They look at Creepy Joe. I mean, he's another idiot. You know, in my opinion, I should say this is my opinion. And maybe Trump will...
I'm sure most agree with you, Richie.
Maybe they do, Ryan, yeah. But maybe they'll take that approach again this time around. What do you think? Is he a shoe-in, do you think, in November?
Yeah. I mean, I've been saying that really early into this administration. I think it's pretty clear that they're... And this is, of course, for people that I think are able to see, and I could be wrong, but able to see the two-party illusion. I think that all these actions have driven to re-elect Trump from the Democrat side and everything. I mean, how can we have someone like Joe Biden who can barely string sentences together actually up here in front of us, you know, with all of the other parts of the, you know, the weird actions around children. I mean, these things are very real discussions. And this is the guy, right? This is the one. It seems clearly leading in Trump's direction. But I think at the end of the day, regardless of that, you're right on the point that it's always, I mean, the lesser of two evils argument is their go-to. And of course, remember that if you're voting for lesser of two evils, you're still voting for evil. And that's not something that we can allow with what we pretend we believe in this country. You know, and the problem is you get into the discussion then of what do you do then? And the hard part is, you know, the discussion of like abstaining from a corrupt system. It's really hard for people to wrap their minds around. But to the point, this is what I believe is going to happen, like you're saying, that Joe Biden's there. So they're going to say, well, he's obviously worse than Trump. And I feel like I'd almost have to agree with that because Biden is just like on its face exactly what Trump is trying to hide. I think they're both the same ultimately. And Trump's just not good at hiding it. But it will amount to that they're going to pick him over Biden. And I see a lot of Democrats even saying that right now.
I don't know why I said Methuselah, Noah's father. I'm an idiot. I must have meant Mephistopheles or something like that when I was talking about Clinton. Ryan Christian is our guest. I mean, talking about the army rolling out vaccines, that's spooky stuff, that, isn't it? It's time to stop laughing at these clowns when they tell you. I take that, and I'm not a tough guy. I don't pretend to be one. I take that as a threat. You know, if I was living in the US, I would think, Jesus, the president is threatening me with sending the army out with vaccines. Is this just hyperbole from Trump, or should we take it seriously?
Oh, it's 100% serious. I mean, we already see military deployed for other reasons around this whole COVID-19 thing. We've images of random masked, unmarked military just sweeping people up off the street. I mean, it's clearly happening. But I think that this is the point is that the people that are now going to support it are going to say, well, it's because Trump's doing it and they're going to people on his side. And ultimately, it's because they're just doing it to help, which, by the way, is not that unheard of. There's been precedents in the past of using things like that for vaccines or, you know, the ways that they facilitate these actions. But at the end of the day, whether or not it's mandatory, whether or not it's going to be forced, whether or not they're just helping or however you look at it, it's still a very alarming aspect. I mean, we used to balk at the concept of deploying military. Oh, you know, the Posse Comitatus Act. Who cares about that now? Right. It's because danger, because fear. We just start removing blockages of things that used to be a big deal. You know, so whether or not we're in this issue, whether or not there's a vaccine, this is an alarming step that we will never, that every one of these steps have been things that are setting precedents that as we go forward, we're not going to go back, right? We're not going to suddenly get a vaccine and all of a sudden everything reverts back to normal. That's an illusion. All these steps are being put in place for a reason, including the military. So all the supporters come out and scream about how, oh, he didn't say it's going to be mandatory. But then we also omit the idea of, you know, societal and financial exclusion if you do or you don't, right? And then it just becomes this weird, ominous, military-guided, mandatory, whatever way you spin it, you know? And that's alarming no matter how you look at it.
I looked at you coming on today. I like a good argument, Mia. I tend to argue and take the opposing point of view to my guests as much as I can because it makes for a more fun interview. And there are people listening who disagree. Again, in this case, I can't argue with you and be the devil's advocate because it's pretty clear. You talked about societal, you know, your ability to move, to congregate, to be at the basketball game. It's obvious now that they plan to restrict those privileges unless you take the vaccine. So coercion would appear to be the most likely next step. Again, I talked with Spiro about this in Air One. Ryan Christian, the last American vagabond, is on the show with us today. That's the thing now, isn't it? It's going to be coercion.
Right. It's and this is exactly this. I mean, I wrong choice of word. This is basically the same thing as mandatory. I mean, if we're really understanding this, and it's similar, of course, as we're talking about China bad guy, the idea that yet at the same time, basically modeling ourselves after what they're doing, it just doesn't really make sense. But it's you're talking about a system which, as you pointed out, is already happening. We already have airliners talking about not allowing people on planes unless they have digital passports once that's around. We already have restaurants in different locations excluding people based on lack of mask or lack of – I mean, this is already happening. So that's the idea of a societal financial exclusion aspect where they're not going to jam it into your arm, but they're going to say unless you do this thing, you just simply won't have a normal life, even normal within this, quote, new normal. So it'll be even worse than everybody else where you can't go shopping. You can't get on a plane. You know, you can't get on the bus. And that's the same thing in my mind.
Talk about the financial aspect. You mentioned shopping there. One of my concerns, and I've been doing this type of program for about 10, 11 years now, this type of completely free, open speech program where we talk about everything. And even back then, some of my guests, even back then, the late, great Jim Mars and others, they were warning about cashless. And my concern is, as we get, we're nearly there already in terms of going cashless. I do believe that that will be a punishment, I believe. I believe that when people don't, because you hear, at the moment you hear a lot on television news, personal responsibility for the collective, you know, that you have a personal responsibility to keep yourself healthy. Because if you're not, you're a danger to everybody else. They keep beating this drum. So to me, it's a logical step in the near future when there is no cash. And it's coming really soon that it's a case of, well, we'll just stop your bank account for a week then. Or for 2 weeks. Or we'll take some money out of it. We'll bail in. We'll punish you by taking out $50 or whatever. And again, maybe I shouldn't be saying this stuff because it isn't here yet. But it's got to be the next step, isn't it, Brian? It's got to be.
Well, yes, and we see these things already happening in places like China. You know, the actions that are, you know, if you're not a good citizen, that you're getting, you have repercussions for it. And they even just announced that they're actually blending the social credits, like Sesame Credit, the things James Corbett has talked about, with their current contact tracing plans for COVID-19. So it's, here you go. That's where this is leading. You know, and the thing about this cashless society is really important because it's obviously here. Right off the bat, we were already seeing these signs about cash shortages of coins and, you know, kind of driving us in this direction. But it makes me think of something I just discussed with Whitney Webb today in regard to the kind of predictive health scenario they're leading into, right? This kind of medical pre-crime aspect where, and it's, by the way, something they already tried to justify with mass shootings and so on from before that just now fits in with COVID-19, that sets you up for an idea where you've got an app or a watch. Amazon's already made a watch called the Halo.
It does,
The tone of your voice and so on. And they use this information to then rate whether or not you're, you know, healthy or not. But that's a very quick jump into being whether health is the same denominator, same decision-making metric as, you know, a good citizen, right? You can see these things kind of being the similar aspect that, oh, well, you went out to that place you weren't supposed to, so now you're marked, you have a markdown right there, right? And this is then tied to things like the financial aspect, like all of this, and it's exactly what you're painting. And so it's not conspiracy theory. They are literally building the network of this whole thing right around us while the blue checks on Twitter scream about how we're all conspiracy theorists. I mean, it's kind of like screaming about how chemtrails are fake news while they're telling us they're doing it to fight climate change, right? It's that literally happens today.
This is important now. Let's stay with this. Ryan Christian is our guest. Go to thelastamericanvagabond.com. And if you go to YouTube, go to Google, look for the channel. Let's hope the channel is still there in 6 months' time. It's The Last American Vagabond on YouTube. Subscribe to it there. Massive, massively popular channel. So let's stay with that then. Because you talked about the blue-checked Twitter accounts screaming that people are conspiracy theorists. Have to say, you're right up to a point. In this country, we're seeing many of them raise their heads above the parapet, Ryan. We've seen Ian Brown from the Stone Roses. We've seen Noel Gallagher. We've seen Denise Welch, who's a very popular actress and television host. And they're going bananas about this, about what's happening. So you're right in general, but we're seeing one or two people step out. Culture wars are going on everywhere. Identity politics is the big thing. It has been for years. We're, as humanity, as a species, we're diluting ourselves into more and more ridiculous identity groups, and we're all screaming that we're the victim, or we're the exclusive victim. That's got to be playing into what's happening, because people are distracted as much by the identity politics and the culture wars as they are by COVID, and it's maybe preventing a lot of people from seeing through the tyranny that's planned after COVID. What do you think? Obviously, you've got it going on there with BLM protests, and it's kicking off in your country big time. Talk about that.
Yeah, I very much agree. And that's a fair point about the, you know, I shouldn't oversimplify. I mean, that's never a good thing to do. But, you know, the blue check is kind of just the analogy of like the control metric. But you're right. There's a lot of people out there that are doing that. They're being courageous enough to stand up and fight against the predominant narrative. But you're right. The culture aspect, the identity, you know, this whole part of it plays a huge part, because that is what this, you know, if you're in that kind of inner circle of the social media influencers, you're not supposed to challenge these ideas, right? So you can see there's a clear block right there where that plays in with it. I mean, we can all acknowledge that there's no difference between people out barbecuing and people out marching for a protest in regard to the concept of transmission, right? Yeah, yeah. So there's no difference there, but yet they tell us that it's either okay because this is a cultural moment, or whether they're, or it's just that, not that it is different, that a Black Lives Matter protest is different than something else. And that is an instantaneous, we should have known right there that there's an obvious political part of this, which we already probably do. But so you have these people online that, yes, they see that and go, okay, well, I'm taking my cues. I'm not supposed to challenge that. And so it does stop a lot of people from stepping up and voicing opinions where they should be. It's the same way they use the concept of racism in regard to, you know, speaking about governments, that where you're not allowed to talk about this because that's racist. But look, we're talking about a government, right? It's just a sidestep. So it's a good point, Richie.
Yeah, I watch it with great interest, and I see how emotionally involved people get in it. And I know that BLM, I know it's got ties to dark actors like Soros and others. I'm well aware of it. But in amongst all of that are genuine people that are totally confused. Yes. And believe what it is that they're saying, and are happy to be part of whichever group. And it's tragic, really. And it's kind of resulted in, I was going to ask you how you've seen extraordinary changes over the years in terms of how you would communicate with people. You know, in recent years, we've seen it become more difficult to communicate people because they've become so much more entrenched in whatever position they happen to hold at that time. And questioning it or even challenging it becomes a personal affront, which does nobody any good. And then you never get anywhere. And I've noticed that over the years I've been in I came to the mainstream media back in 1998. And I never would have believed, if you told me in 1998, that families, Ryan, brothers and sisters would fall out over things like Brexit, would fall out over things like Trump, you know, blood relatives. But that's how we've been conditioned. And, you know, they're geniuses, these people. I mean, they really are. Let's hand it to them before we tear them down, right? They are geniuses.
Yeah, it's brilliant social engineering. I mean, really is. Think about what changed with, it's always been slowly building, but what changed in 2016? I mean, it became, you're either the enemy or you're on our side. Not that we differ politically, or that, you know, we all argue about the president, then we elect somebody, and then we come together as a country, or, you know, whether that ever really happened, that was the perception. But it suddenly changed to, well, oh, you're supporting Trump? Well, you're going to destroy the country, so I hate you now, you know? And to your point, my brother and I, He's a Trump supporter, and we had the same kind of thing happen where we literally didn't talk for a long time, you know, and that's because people were he perceived me to be the enemy of the country at that time. And I think he's broadened his opinion a little bit, and that's why we're able to talk now. But that's an alarming thing, because we need to have discourse. Discourse is the most important part of any kind of functioning representative government, where we can actually have conversations and debate things, you know, without accepting them wholeheartedly or denying them without looking at them, you know?
I did a radio program in Spain many years ago with a black dude called Sonny, who was a chef. He was a fantastic broadcaster and a lovely guy. And we got on really well until I started saying negative things about Obama on the radio show that I did, because I was on before him. I had a news program, he had a music program. But he was very bright guy. And he used to talk a little politics himself between the tunes. But once I started criticising Obama, he really didn't like it and just refused to speak to me, wouldn't acknowledge my presence. And I tried to explain to him that, look, I've been in mainstream media for years. These are a shower of bastards, not to put too fine a point on it. None of them are who they say they are. They're all playing for the same banksters and the same corporate interests. Anyway, it was brutal, brutal atmosphere around the place, and I never saw him again until about 5 years ago. And this was like 6 years later. To his credit, he dropped me a little message on Facebook, and he said, "You were right." And that was it, you know. I said, "Well, good, good, you know." I wasn't having a go at him because I'm some white guy who, you know, didn't like him. I knew he wasn't Martin Luther King, but I mean, he sold people, Obama, didn't he? He sold everybody. Well, not you, obviously, Ryan, but he sold, I mean, even people like Jim Fetzer, whom I've known for years, God love Jim, even Jim Mars, God love Jim, rest in peace, great friend. They thought he was the bee's knees, Obama. You know, the civil rights movement. They thought, here we go, a black dude. And I'm like, he's a bastard. What's wrong with you? You know,
it's the same thing as with Trump. It's the same thing. I saw there were people that were hardcore libertarians that were like anti two-party system, anti-establishment, that the moment Trump got in, that they now they're hardcore Republican status. And the thing is that they were just convinced that they won. Right. They were convinced Trump was there. They won. Yeah. It's over now. We can relax. Right. Well, obviously, that's not the case, but they're here. They're still there. It's pretty crazy.
I asked them Spiro this in the first hour. Do you think they played the long game with Donald Trump? An old pal of mine thinks so, thinks that he would have been earmarked maybe in the mid 90s as a future president. And that might explain why he spoke out about 9/11 all those years ago. They were creating a narrative for him. Now, I don't know if any of that is true, but it's worth exploring maybe.
Very much so. I mean, these are always questions we should ask. It doesn't mean that we can, you know, guarantee this is the case, but it's smart to think about this, especially with all the evidence around it. I mean, you can go back into the concept of the Rothschild bankers essentially buying his debt out and actually saying that he's more valuable as a brand than the money we're spending. And so you could argue that from that moment forward, he was beholden to these people, which is obviously the case. That doesn't mean that guarantee that they influence his choices, but it's a question we should ask. And, you know, and then watching how it all played out, even with the election itself. Remember that we had WikiLeaks documents that showed that Clinton, in her own correspondence with her team, were saying that we need to make sure that Trump is on that final stage. Yeah. Now, you could argue that's because they thought that they would beat him.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's something else.
Good. Well done. You're right. It's a possibility. A possibility they thought it was a slam dunk against him, but maybe it was something else. We know that these people were intimately acquainted for a long time. These are opinion questions. Now, you don't have to answer these. You are a broadcast journalist. You can say, listen, Richie, I'm not going to answer that, but I'll put it to you anyway. Trump's supporters do listen to this program because they email me and they tweet to me. A little bit too close to Jeffrey Epstein. I asked that because you mentioned your friend Whitney Webb a short time ago, and I've read her articles on the Epstein story. I think very good research there. So what do you think? Trump's ties to Epstein a bit too close for comfort, do you think, Ryan? Not to mention Bill Clinton, of course.
Absolutely. You know, but it's important to point out, you know, with you know, honesty, which anybody should be able to say, it's not proof. Oh. Trump being around these people does not prove that he did what everyone else, you know, with the things we can prove about other people. But it is suspect. And I think it's a little bit dishonest for people that support him to pretend like that's not the case. You know, we should dive into it, and we should be asking questions. And, you know, but he's also made statements that make it seem as if he did see what that was and tried to distance himself from it. So you can see evidence on both sides of it. But yes, I think it's clear that there is reasons to question that.
Good point, Ryan. And if he did see things, and that's a very good point, he did give an impression that he knew what was going on and stepped aside. What happened to picking up the telephone and calling 911, eh? What happened to picking up the phone and saying, listen, this business bloke, I think he might be getting underage girls to come to his apartment. Listen, keep my name out of it, but I mean, why wouldn't you do that? So, yeah, I'm not going to give Trump a pass there. It's exactly 22 minutes to the top of the hour. The Last American Vagabond. Ryan Christian is on the programme. The website is thelastamericanvagabond.com. The YouTube channel, the same name. Check it out. Subscribe to the content there. Not that you get any messages these days. I could be subscribed to you. I think I am subscribed to your channel. I don't get any notifications saying that you're that you've posted an episode. Surprise, surprise. Tell me about this trans madness. Talking of culture wars. We're just, we're shooting from the hip here, you and me. We didn't plan anything. I just find it, as a 45-year-old guy who's been in the media since the 90s, the fact that we're talking today about men who identify as women, and as Tony Soprano would say, rest in peace, I salute, you know, live and let live, you do whatever you want to do. But the fact that people are losing their jobs, Ryan, because they won't testify that they agree that somebody with male genitalia is a woman, and by not agreeing with that, that could have career-ending consequences. I never thought we would be here. What do you think?
Yeah, that's pretty alarming, regardless of the topic, that you're saying, here's what you're supposed to believe, and unless you say that publicly, we're going to penalize you for it. Like, that's really crazy to think about. But the thing for me about this is to, obviously, off the bat, like, I don't care what you want to do with your body and your life. As long as you're not putting someone else at risk or doing something that's illegal, you feel free to do what you want with your body. The moment that it makes a problem is when you tell me that I have to think a certain way about your body or about who you are, right? That's just not how this works. And the problem is that that statement, even though having full-throated support, you know, you guys can, you know, you do whatever you want to do, that still then becomes that you're anti that, even though you're clearly stating the opposite. And the problem for me is that we have a very small percentage of the population, either the U.S. or the world, that is now seemingly dictating a huge disproportionate portion of the policy discussion. That's not okay, no matter what the topic is, right? So we need to see that. There's politics involved. But you get into these topics of things like, you know, even when we get into the idea of the different names and things, now it's gotten to the point of where people can just say, well, I'm just gender fluid. I'll be a man tomorrow and a woman next day. And that's there's legal implications for that. I mean, everyone's in a tailspin now trying to pretend like all this makes sense, trying to pretend like it applies to different things. I mean, you're painting themselves into corners, right? The people can say, well, I identify as a cat. And there are people like that. Which is just, it's unreal. Like, how do you play that in with everything else? Anyway, I could go off forever. The bottom line is that you cannot force these concepts on other people. That is fundamentally against what we believe we stand for in this country and in the UK.
We're living in a live episode of the Jerry Springer Show, because things that were exclusively reserved for Jerry Springer Show talking points are now happening in the world. It's crazy. J.K. Rowling has a book out about a man who dresses as a woman and then kills women, and you've got talk shows dedicating hours with people arguing about whether that's transphobic or not. And I'm sitting there, and here's a metaphor that's occurred to me. It's like the establishment or the elite has taken an egg whisk and is just basically pushing it around our brains with everything, with these culture wars, with the trans stuff, with the COVID, and people don't know whether they're coming or going. It's like a global gaslighting plan, Ryan. That's how I see it.
Well, here's an interesting question. Why does it matter if that movie is transphobic? Isn't that a piece of art? Isn't that, I mean, look, we have movies, and I'm not even saying that in a way that, like, let's say that she's doing that because that's how she feels. What if she's making a movie about being transphobic. Like, how does that suddenly become wrong? You know, there's movies about rapists. There's movies about all kinds of things because they're either making a point or they're documenting it or, you know, whatever. The bottom line is it's a film. And the fact that we can even now say that might be, you know, against this one this idea that we have, and that means it's not allowed. That shows you exactly where we are. I mean, that's censorship based on opinion.
And thinking back, I'm very honest. I've never claimed that I had any, you know, foresight about things. But when Google was allowed to buy YouTube, and I knew the implications as a journalist who produced and presented radio shows for years, and I used to be a financial commentator. I've got to be honest about that. I wasn't an official financial analyst, but I was used to explain financial stories by radio stations I worked for because I understood some of that nonsense, some of that boring stuff. And when Google acquired YouTube, I knew straight away what that meant for free speech. I said it way back. That was the only thing really I could point to. And I said, look at that. Look at what that means for Dailymotion. Look at what it means for every other video hosting site. I could see back then. And then it was only a few years after that I began to realise that Google and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, they were basically to become the cybersphere town squares, weren't they? They were basically used to draw everybody or nearly everybody in the world in there so that they could basically lock the door behind us. And then it's very easy to choose what people see, when they see it, and how it makes them feel. Again, it's genius, Ryan.
And that's a really, the way you laid that out is really perfect because we need to reflect on that they led us to that point.
Yeah.
You know, government actions and manipulations. And then the point is now they're using that, the situation that they created to then say, well, that's problematic. So how about this? How about we government regulate this same problem, right? And that's what they're leading to. People saying, well, it's the new town square. We need regulation. We need law. That's the opposite of what we need. We need less government involvement. I mean, how dumb is it to say, look, and it's like everything else, COVID-19, anything else, the government messes it up and the government's going to step in and fix it. Like, it's just, it's asinine.
Sorry to interrupt you now. On this, stay with this. Did you see The Social Dilemma yet?
I'm sorry, the what?
The Social Dilemma. It's a new Netflix documentary.
Oh, no, I don't think I've seen it.
Now, everybody's boycotting Netflix, understandably, because they're up in arms about Cuties, which I believe is disgraceful. But yeah. I haven't seen it. I don't really want to see Cuties, but people who are in the know tell me it's a disgrace. It's basically soft porn involving children. I don't want to see that. But The Social Dilemma is a very interesting film about the power of social media companies to influence opinions. And without spoiling it, it starts off very well in terms of it uses basically the whistleblowers from various tech companies. It uses them to explain how Facebook influences the way we feel and the way we think. It's all very good. But then, of course, it becomes very predictable and it starts blaming Trump for everything. And it basically decides. And one of the most startling things said in the film is by Tristan Harris, who used to be a design ethicist at Google. But now apparently he's a good guy, he's a whistleblower. I don't think he's a great guy, to be honest. He says, ultimately going forward, if we don't all agree on certain things, there's no hope for society or for humanity. And that really struck me. I kept rewinding it and playing it back. He was basically saying that there are undisputable truths, irrefutable truths on certain issues, and we have to agree with them. Basically, the social media company's responsibility is to push that for the greater good. I mean, it doesn't get any more sinister than that.
Yeah, and that's weird, is especially that he's the whistleblower calling stuff out and then steps in and says the same essential thing. But see, this is how the problem today is, that he perceives himself, if that's an honest comment, to be the good guy of this problem, even though he's calling for the same type of actions, but with things that he agrees with. That's how this whole problem is.
Let me give you the quote. Social media. Let me give you the quote exactly so that I don't do the guy a disservice. He says, if we can't agree on what is true, then we're screwed. That's exactly what he said.
And that's a little bit different, but yeah, it's still the same idea that we need to come together and decide what we're allowed to say.
And accept that some things are true and we have to accept that those are facts. But I was screaming at the telly because I had half a Bacardi at the time. I was drinking a Bacardi, right? And I'm roaring at the telly. My missus is telling me to shut up. And I'm like asking, who or what becomes the arbiter of what is true? And here's my question to you, Ryan Christian. Surely the answer to that has got to be artificial intelligence.
Exactly. Well, that's the foregone conclusion, right? That's where this is all leading to, is that the same thing with the predictive health and the, you know, gate. It's all about the training the AI systems with the data they're currently using, justified by COVID-19, to reimagine the world for our safety. And it applies to all these same things we're talking about, you know, applied to the previous discussion. And, you know, this will be used to, I mean, it's already essentially happening, right? We all know that AI algorithms are already essentially deciding what can be removed and not. And, you know, there's people that are involved in it, but this is already what's happening. And just imagine a point where it's completely, as I mean, right now it's unaccountable, but it gets to a point to where the AI decides. And well, of course, because it's technology and because we can all believe technology and science always knows what's right. Yeah. I mean, Cuomo just tweeted out the other day, science knows, period. That's it. Which is just one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. I'm just like, what does that even mean? That is shockingly meaningless. What do you mean science knows? You can't just broadly say it. It's the same as saying believe women back when the Me Too thing was happening. Yeah. You know, it's like, well, some people, sometimes they lie. You know, it's ridiculous.
Hey, listen, we've got 3 minutes left. Thanks for coming on. TheLastAmericanVagabond.com is the website if you haven't heard Ryan before. And it is The Last American Vagabond on YouTube. Real treat having you with us today. It's lovely to make your acquaintance and meet you. As I asked Spiro, and as I ask everybody these days, last question, are you optimistic? Are we going to find a way out of it?
You know, whether it's forcefully or you know, misplaced, I am. And I constantly make sure that we have to think of it this way. If they didn't care about what we were doing, I mean, if we weren't making a difference, if we weren't changing people's minds, they wouldn't care about these kind of shows. But they do. And they censor us and they stop us and they attack us and they disparage what we're doing. And the reason that's happening is because we can change people's minds. We can affect the narrative today. And I think that's one of the main reasons why what I would think is this end game is being executed, because the technocratic world they're building is much more difficult for that to happen. So we need to be optimistic. We need to realize that unless we seize that optimism, that reality that we can change things right now, then maybe we won't have that opportunity in the future.
Great.
So it's good to see that optimism right now.
Great way to end it, mate. Thanks for coming on. TheLastAmericanVagabond.com, YouTube, The Last American Vagabond. Great to meet you, Ryan. I'm sure we'll chat again in the near future. Thanks for your time today. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too, Richie. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
Pretty cool. Ryan Christian live on the line from the Pacific Coast there. TheLastAmericanVagabond.com. Nice that he sent me an email about a week or two ago and he said, I've been getting requests from my listeners to speak to you, he said. So I said, well, come on then. Come on and have a chat. That's how it works. I get a lot of emails from people, myself recommending that I have people on. And I'm sure Ryan's name has come up in the past as well. Coming up for 10 minutes to the top of the hour. You are listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show. Let me remind you, because I was away yesterday, I'll be with you tomorrow. Now, I haven't decided what time yet. I know. Not very clever. I don't know. It'll be around 2. It might be 3. Depends. I've got a few messages. Do we say messages? Messages we say in Ireland. I've got some messages to do in the morning. Nobody ever understands that outside of Ireland. I've got to run some messages. I've got to do some errands. And tomorrow I will be on with you. I'll probably do an hour with a few tunes, a little bit of chat. We'll have some audio. We'll take the piss out of one or two things. And it'll be a bit of a Friday afternoon drive time show. All right? All right. Don't forget Sunday View, of course, live every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock. That's the programme where you and me look at the UK's Sunday newspapers and we have a listen in to the Andrew Marr Show and Sophie Ridge and all the rest of it Sunday morning at 11. Good job. Yes, I don't want to be doing a disservice to Tristan on the social dilemma thing. And I'm all over the place now, you see. My mind's going in two directions. Cuties. Because a number of people were aghast at a film that Netflix... Did they produce Cuties Netflix? Or did they buy it? Or was it their own production? Horrible to see children scantily dressed and stuff like that. I don't know an awful lot about it. But some good mates of mine said to me, it's a disgrace, Richie. And those mates are not prone to hysteria. Yeah, Tristan Harris is the guy in the documentary The Social Dilemma, which is basically the impact of social networking on human beings. A couple of hours long, 90 minutes long maybe. Very interesting in the early part of it, where it does technically explain how these companies do what they do. And that is a must watch. I got cheesed off when it went down the inevitable road of censorship. What do you mean? Well, the whistleblowers from the various tech programs, they were unilateral in their belief that ultimately the social media companies have to do a lot more to get rid of that which is fake from their platforms. And of course, that's incredibly dangerous. But forget about it being incredibly dangerous. It's a given. This is what's going to happen. I said earlier on, and I know Ryan Christian believes it, he's been saying it himself on his own platform, these Trojan horses, they looked fantastic when they were given to us. The social media platforms, they looked magnificent. You know, they were designed so well. From an aesthetic point of view, they looked so amazing. Drew you in. You know, the idea that you could be on Facebook and connect with, I mean, we had friends reunited anyway, didn't we? But the fact that you could be on Facebook and you could be connected with people that you haven't seen since your school days, and you could be connected with your sister who lives in Australia and all the rest of it. It's wonderful. And then people got addicted to randomly shouting things out on Facebook. Didn't they? People got addicted to randomly voicing their opinion. Shouting into the ether, effectively. You know, typing. Oh, Trump is, or you know, Clinton. Well, of course, we had Facebook long before that. Obama. And then people got addicted to that. They got addicted to checking it to see how many people liked it. They got addicted, didn't they? They got seriously addicted to putting something on Facebook that they thought would get them attention, or on Twitter, and then repeatedly going back to see how many likes they got, how many followers they got. It's an amazing Trojan horse, really. And everybody got on there. I think there's, correct me if I'm wrong, 2 billion? Is it more than 2 billion now? Is it 2.5 billion users? This is staggering, that half the planet. You take into consideration how many people living on Earth are under the age of 10. So it wouldn't be much use to them anyway. Effectively, probably every adult on the planet, next to or near or next to every adult on the planet, is using Facebook. And now the door slams shut behind you. You can't leave it. You're not going to leave it because your friends are not going to leave it. And it can be, it is then used to program you in ways that you never thought were possible. So I would recommend The Social Momentum. Yeah. Is that what it's called again? Jesus wept. The Social Dilemma, you see. Social Dilemma on Netflix. As for Cuties, you tell me. I haven't watched it. And I won't watch it. I won't watch it. I saw a horrifying documentary some years ago about beauty pageants for very young girls. Shocking. Shocking that people would sexualize their children like that, that they would dress their children like that, that children would wear outfits, bathing costumes, that if your wife or girlfriend wore them, you'd be delighted. So Cuties, I can't speak about it really, so I better shut up about it. Right, that's it for me. Sometime tomorrow afternoon I'll be with you. I'll give you plenty of notice on, ironically, I'll tweet something out and I'll put something on Facebook. The richieallen.co.uk website is imminent. It's nearly ready to go. Hayden Hewitt has been working on it. It'll be lovely when it's launched, and there will be articles on there and stuff that you'll find amusing and interesting, and a lot of content posted on there daily. So check it out. Thanks to my guest today, Spiro Skouras, activistpost.com. It's at O underscore R-I-P-S on Twitter. At O underscore R-I-P-S on Twitter. He's Spiro Skouras on YouTube. The Last American Vagabond. If you look for The Last American Vagabond on Twitter, you'll find him immediately. And the website is thelastamericanvagabond.com and The Last American Vagabond on YouTube. Thanks to Ryan Christian and to Spiro Skouras today. Thank you for listening. Closing out today's programme, well, with something a little bit bizarre and a bit lovely. See you tomorrow then. Bye now.